Pasuk says, "Ukachten lochem b'yom rishon, priyetz hador, kapos tmarim, manafei savos ve'arvei nachal, smachtem lifnei Hashem elokeichem shivas yomim." And it's a strange pasuk because when we come to two of the meaning, dalad meaning, they're very explicit. Kapos tmarim v'arvei nachal. On the other hand, when we come to two of the meaning, priyetz hodor v'anafei tzavos, it's not a precise definition, it's a descriptive definition. Now, the Gemara tries to explain to you why an Esrig is a Priyetz Hodor. Take a look in the Ramban, among other Mephorshim. Basically what they say, Priyetz Hodor means a citrus fruit. Okay, but you can't take an orange. And you can't even take a lemon. So the Gemara gives different simonim. Similarly, anafei tzavos, the Gemara is what we know as a hodos, and the Gemara gives simonim. The question is, and it's a major question, whether or not these simonim are just a way of explaining armasora, or these simonim are actually are halachically relevant. The Rambam is very clear. The Rambam says, Kapos Torah Muspa Torah. Now, the Rambam is defining what the meaning are. Kapos tmarim means not every palm has to be a date palm. But it says kapos tmarim. The Gemara says kofos. Hechroyos shel dekel kishayitzmuchu kodem shiyispardu. That means the definition is before it fans out. It has to be straight before it fans out. Before it fans out, it's not a psul. After it fans out, it's not a psul. It's just not the min that the Torah says. It's as if you took a group of lilacs. Priyetz hodor ha'ma b'torah hu ha'esrog. It's an esrog. All of the simonim, the Gemara gives a fine and nice. If you find another tree that would have the same simonim, which happens to be a lemon tree, so that's no good. It has to be a certain type of fruit called an esrog. Anafei tzavos hama b'tor hu ha'hodos sha'olov chofin esetzo. So the Rambam says two things. A, it is a hodos. And a hodos with a specific leaf arrangement. That means if it's a hodos without that leaf arrangement, it's not the min. It's, as again, you took some lilacs, you took some carnations. It's something totally different. Then he says, Avolim hoyu shnei olim b'shova zekeneget zev. It's 2-1-2-1-2-1. Ola shlish lemalme ein ze ovo savonikro hodashota. So the min is that a specific leaf arrangement where you have 3-3-3-3, at least three, and it covers, the three are arranged in such a way that it covers the branch. And if you wouldn't, and if it wouldn't cover the branch, it's not the min of the Torah. So the Rambam is very clear that A, an esrog is only an esrog. And that's it. And when the Gemara says, Dor, May Shana Lashana. So it's not, and so that's a way of indicating this is one of the features of an esrog. Tosus is not as clear on that. When the Gemara talks about a hados, Tosus says that maybe it's something different. Why? Because according to Tosus, the Parshas of Tosus, that anything else that would have the simonim would also be kosher. Now, with an afkamina, this comes is as follows. We began talking last week about an esrog morkav, where Tosfos is difficult, is all the simonim that the Gemara gives, you can find it also in a lemon. According to the Rambam, that's irrelevant. A lemon is just not an esrog. An esrog is a very specific fruit. A lemon may have all the simonim, the Gemara says. That means Dorbi Ila Mishana Lashana. What does that mean? There is no season for it. You always have lemons on a tree. They keep growing the entire time. Other fruits have specific seasons. The only two fruits that have that are a lemon and an esrog. Tam Eitzu Per Yeshava. I'm not an expert in taste, but at one point I had a lemon tree growing in my yard, and I sucked the sap on it. It seemed to taste very much like a lemon. In esrog, it's certainly true. I also had a tangerine tree. You suck the sap, it doesn't taste anything like a tangerine. So at least the only experiments, these are the three trees I've tried. I don't know what a plum or apple was about. And that creates a serious problem for Tosus, because Tosus happens to be talking about a hados, but the Rambam is very clear in definition. Where that plays a major role is in defining what is the problem, if there is a problem, of an esrog morkav. Esrog morkav, the first time it was discussed, I began talking about it last week. But since this is a major thing and loads of shilas about it, just want to give you understand the entire literature. You will not find it discussed at all in Rishonim, even though Harkov is discussed all over the place. Harkov, let me just review the facts. Harkov means you take one branch, put it on another branch, and so that it sucks up the sap through the trunk of one tree and then goes into the branch of another tree. The reason that is done, it's very simple. Certain trees are more fragile. Certain trees are more sturdy. But the fruit that comes out is the fruit of the branch that it grows from. Genetically, and it is genetically no different than anything else. It happens to have a slightly different taste because, let's say, if you would graft an esrog onto an apple tree and you would taste the esrog, then there would be an esrog taste with some apple taste because all the moisture that's coming up into the esrog is passing through the apple tree. So that's going to contribute taste into the esrog. But if you take a seed from that esrog and you plant it, you'll get a tree that is exactly the same with no difference whatsoever in any other esrog tree. That's a simple fact of anyone who's ever dealt with any farming or understands anything to do with normal agriculture. Now, until the Maramapano was in Italy, wrote a whole tshuva on the topic, I'm not sure that it was even discussed. Either it was obviously mutter, or it was obviously osur. One of the two. The osurim say it wasn't discussed because obviously osur, so I don't have to mention it. The matirim say it's obviously mutter, so that's why no one mentioned it. Okay. Now, the Maramapano was in Italy, where esrogim grow, where citrus fruits grow, and he was very much aware of normal agricultural botanical facts. So he asks it, he discusses it. That's picked up by the Ramah, and it's a Chuvas HaRamah about Nesrig Morkov. Now, if you take a look in the literature of the reasons for Nesrig Morkov, some people who wrote Chuvas were unaware of the facts. And they say it's a fruit that's half-half. That's not true. For a fruit to half-half means you have to cross-pollinate, which that's not what's happening. When you want to make a hybrid fruit, you have to work on the pollen level, not on the branch level. But some now, what is there are two major objections to an Esrig Morkov. And one is the Chsam Sofer. Chsam Sofer, when he wrote, was totally aware of all the agricultural facts. But he says one of the simonim of an esrog is tam eid superior shove. If you have an esrog growing on a lemon tree, the esrog is the taste of the esrog will be esrog plus lemon. I'll taste the take a branch off the tree. It'll be lemon. There's an underlying assumption in what the Chsam Sofer is saying. The underlying assumption what the Chsam Sofer is saying is that the simonim given in the Gemara are not just background, but he's working within Tosus, and he quotes Tosus about Hodas. They have to be actually functional also. Now, so what is it? He says, even though the fruit is an esrog in such a hybrid, but and it's a total esrog, but it has to satisfy also the simonim of the Gemara. Does he say another fruit that would satisfy the Simon of the Gemara would also be good? He seems to say no, which means he takes the Rambam and he plus Tosus and he puts them together. That means you need an esrog, but only an esrog shatam eitz oper yeshava, and therefore he asks esrog morkov. That's one reason to ask an esrog morkov. There's another reason to ask an esrog morkov. And that is, there's a Gemara in Sota. Gemara in Sota is talking about Orla. Actually, it begins from the Pasuk, Umi'u'ish ha'shanota kerem v'olchililo, li'elech v'yoshev beisu pen yomus b'lchom v'shacher y'chanchenu. That means, the Gemara has, let's say, any normal tree, you take a branch, put it in the ground, and a tree grows. So it's orla, no matter what fruit is on it now, the new fruits that grow, it's 3 years, 3 years of orla. So Gemara says that is true if you put it in the ground. What if you graft it onto a tree? And the fruit that grows from this branch. So the Gemara says, Botla yalda bezukena. No, it's absorbed into the tree and it's all considered part of the tree. So, because of that, many achronim want to say that I take an esrog branch grafted onto a lemon tree. When I do that, the whole what sort of a tree, I look at the tree as a totality, as I would in Hilchos Orla, I will look in Hilchos Chozim Eros HaMelchama, and I say, I have a lemon tree. What type of fruit is growing on this lemon tree? Happens to be an esrog. Now, therefore, how do I determine what the min of this thing is? Do I look at the tzuras hapri? It's an esrog. Do I look what sort of a tree it's growing from? It's growing from a lemon tree. And how do I define them in? This is where Achronim have a major disagreement. And those are the two main reasons that there's a Kshayla in Esrog Morkav. Halacha l'maisa, we do not take an Esrog Morkav. Haskamas kol haposkim. And the two bases for doing it is to try to determine either because of the Chassam Sofer's reason or a very common reason of the Achronim of Botla Yaldu Zakena. Now, just as an aside, there are various esrogim that grow with various yichusim, and they are. And one of the reasons you need a hashgacha on an esrog is is it come from a tree that's morkov, or it's a product somehow of morkov? If it's somehow a product of Morkev, then that means you have an original esrog that grew on a tree that's Morkev. You take a seed and you plant it. So according to the Chassam Sofer, it'll come out as a perfect esrog. Because what grows is an esrog fruit, and it'll be time eight, so per yeshava, there'll be no problem. But it's not so clear that according to the Svara of Butla Yalda Bezakena, that if you have an esrog fruit growing on a lemon tree, and then you take a seed, and therefore, since it's a fruit growing on a lemon tree, it becomes Alpidin 11, even though it looks like an esrog, and you take the seed of this lemon and you plant it, and the tree that comes out looks like an esrog tree will be an esrog tree, an esrog or a lemon. That's completely not clear. And because of that, most people are totally machmer when it comes to esrogim from any origin of Morkov. And you have one of two options. Some people rely on various hashgachas, probably the best thing to do. It has to be a serious hashgacha like every other hashgacha. And others, there was a whole shuk that began of people go to Morocco where esrogim go wild. They're like as a standard fruit in the mountains there, and they go pick their esrogim off of wild esrog trees in the Morocco and Moroccan mountains. But most people don't do that. Okay, that's when we come to a Morkev. Now, here we got into, so that's just to see what the issues are and what the problems are. Now, let's begin with our Ravis. The Masorah that we have in Europe, I don't know what in other places was, that the Rambam says, any form, he says, like this. Arvi nachal hamur b'torah einin kol dovo hagodol b'nachal. It's not everything that grows next to a river. Ela min yaduahu, it's a very specific, well-known type, who anikra arvi nachal. Ola shalo, he says, rov min ze godol hanachal. Most of this grow next to rivers. Ola shalom. Now, what is the simen? Ola shalom moshuch. It's extended. Upiv chalak. It's a smooth leaf. Vakana shalom adam. And it's a red branch. Vazeh vanikra arava. This is an arava. And doesn't have to grow next to a nachal. So when you see people who sell, this is a special arava grew next to an alchal. There's no halachic basis for this whatsoever. It's not on the Rambam. There's no halachic basis for it. The Masorah in Europe was that the weeping willow is an alchal, is an arava, and all forms of this, Now, the Rambam does not say, remember, the Rambam is very clear when he defines a min. It does not have, if a weeping willow would happen to have a branch that is not red, it would be all right, because he's just telling you how to identify what the min is. And if the tree is the weeping willow, and most of it is, and here and there you have branches that are not, that's not going to be a problem. He says, "V'yesh menach adom l'arava, u'shalov shalo ogol." Something similar, and the leaves are round and it's jagged edges. Now, very often there are different types of willows with jagged edges. So the question is, if you would have a weeping willow with jagged edges, the Rambam said there'd be no problem. There's a general way of identifying, if you just see a branch, whether what its origin may be. But if you know it came from a weeping willow, there'd be absolutely no problem. The arava is the easiest. The lulav is the easiest. Now, kapos tmorim means that it had to be a day tree. Now, there are loads of palms, but this has to be specifically a date palm. There are all sorts of love on the market that are from other palms. There, you have to be careful, it's from a date palm. Okay. Now, ahodus. Ahodus is a very specific, it's a myrtle leaf, where you have an arrangement of three or more on the same level all the way up. Number one. And number two, it has to be in such a way that it covers the branch. Let's say that you would have three and then three and three like that. So that the Rambam says the min is it covers the branch. And there's a big nafkamina on that. Big nafkamina is that there's a halacha that all the psulim do not apply on Chol HaMoed. Yontu Sheni Shogol, this is a major machlokas rishonim. But it does not apply in Chol HaMoed. But according to what is it? It doesn't mean in Chol HaMoed, instead of an esrog, you take an apple. It has to be the definition of the min. According to the Rambam, the definition of the min is A, a myrtle, and B, that a certain leaf arrangement. Without that leaf arrangement, it's not even a hodos. It's just like instead of taking an esrog, you take an apple. And that's why the Rambam's definition of hodos is different. When he talks about an esrog, he says, it's an esrog. Talks about a hodos, he says, who are hodos, but not all hodos. She'olov chofen eseitzom. A hodos that has a very specific leaf arrangement. Now, again, in a lulav, he says, if it's not a straight lulav and it fanned out, it's not that it's a lulav puzzle, it's not a lulav. So he's very, very clear. Sometimes it's something as a psul, and sometimes bechal, it's not a min. So, therefore, things that are shaila, whether it's a min, are puzzle yontif sheni, esrog morkev, hodos that's not mashulish, and that is not a continue. The biggest problem is when you keep your lulav and esrog, and some leaves fall off. If the leaf arrangement that fell off is not that it covers the whole thing, so it's not a lulav, not a lulav, it's not a hodas, not a hodas. Okay, now going through things, just basic Jewish education. Mitzvah min hamufcha, the egod lulav. That's a mitzvah that the lulav has to have an egot. That's why we have these lulav holders. But it's not so simple. Nothing in life is simple. Here is Rabbeinu Tam in a Tosfos in Gittin that says only a bar chiyuva can make an egot. That means, according to Rabbeinu Tam, You actually have to tie it together. That's why what generally is done is it's put in a holder, and then you take a lulav branch, you tie it around, and it has to be a kesher shel kayomo, kesher al gabe kesher, not kesher al gabe kesher. So it's no good. But a bar chiyuva actually has to do that. Either you don't only have to tie it. If you have something that slips off and you slip it on, that also you're obligated through that way. But if, let's say, you take your lulav out and you put the holder in somewhere to keep it moist and just slip it back on, that's not good enough. You have to either tie it again or take those rings off and slide them on. Now, the din of nanuim. The basic machlokas between the Rambam and Tosfos. The Gemara says nanuim are shorei mitzvah, an extra part of the mitzvah that's not ma'akev. Which nanuim are we talking about? Tosfos says when you take the lulav, you have to menaneh afterwards. The nanuim during halal are part of mitzvah's halal. So according to Tosfos, there's no problem of any hefsek whatsoever. You make a bracha on the tilas lulav, you menaneh, and that's mitzvah's lulav. Afterwards, during halal, you do another mitzvah, halal with a nanuim. According to the Rambam, no. Rambam says that umitzvah kehilchasa. What is the mitzvah kehilchasa? Mitzvah kehilchasa is sheyagbia aguda. You pick up this aguda shlosha minim biyamin, 3 minim in the right hand side. Ve'esrig b'smol. Ve'yolach ve'yavi v'yananeya. Ve'heichen hum keitzer moluchumo. Ve'heichen hum ananeya. B'shas ha'halal. So according to the Rambam, no. The complete mitzvah is nanuim in the middle of halal. So according to the Rambam, I make a bruch on the tilas lulav, and I'm an aneya to be yotzei tosfos. That's very nice. But the bruch has to be on my complete mitzvah. And the complete mitzvah isn't complete until I get into the middle of halal, ho l'shem ki tov ki lom chasa. So therefore, according to the Rambam, you can't be mafsik. In between the bracha on the tilas lulav and how. That's why people who would like to take the lulav and their homes before they leave the house to take it in sukkah, and then they walk to shul, and I'm sure they say ganyantiv to people on the way, and then they daven. Going to Rambam, that's a total hefsek, and you've lost the bracha on the complete mitzvah. And for those who want to take the lulav in sukkah, so do it in the sukkah in your shul. Go out after chazar starts the sukkah, take your lulav there, then come back in shul and daven challah. To take your lulav in the morning before you go to daven, b'chlal is a problem, because the halacha is if I have two mitzvahs to do, todir sheino todir kodim. So davening shachris is todir. And lulav is not tod, that's number one. But number two, there's a more serious problem, that according to the Rambam, I lose the bracha that's supposed to be chal on the nanuim. So therefore, that's, make sure not to be number one, to do it close to halal, and number two, not to be mafsik in between your bracha and the nanuim of halal. That's number one. Number two, what is the shear? This is a halacha that for some reason people are completely ignorant of. What is the shear of a lulav? Shear of a hadas and arava are 3 tefachim. Now, there's a major machlokas rishonim, whether the three tefachim you need three tefachim of mashulish or rov of mashulish. Rambam is very clear, you need three tefachim of mashulish, because that's the min. The Ravid says, Orubo. Most Rishonim disagree with the Ravid, and since Hadassah and Mishloshim are easy to come by nowadays, and so even though when they sell them in the packages, there's Lachatchila, B'diavad, Super Lachatchila, but it's not a big expense, not that we'll come by. You should have a full three tefachim of Meshulish. Now, that is the shear of the Hodas and Arova. What about the Lulav? Lulav, Mara says, it's Arba tefachim, Kidei Sheyetse Min HaHodas Tefach. What does that mean? So the Ritva points out, it doesn't say it's four tefachim. It says that the lulav has to extend above the hodos, at least the tefach. But it doesn't, but as all Rishonim say pe'achot, it doesn't mean the, what we call the lulav, no. There's the center leaf, the shedra. The shedra in the end becomes a leaf. The end of the shedra has to be one tefach above your hadassah. So if you have, for instance, there's some people who like to have gigantic, they have a whole branch of aravas. Okay. Or they have, but that's no good. The tefach of the, there has to be a tefach of shedra above the height of the hodos and the arava. The reason it says shkreshi yetzim in a hodos tefach is l'chatchila, I'm supposed to have the hodos higher than the arava. That is for many reasons, not halachic reasons, but that's the minig to do it. But if a person's aravas are higher, so the shedra, the lulav, must be one tefach above the hadasim and aravas. Now, that is a very often not observed halacha. Now, the halacha, the way it exists today, is we take a lulav 7 days. A lulav 7 days is midrabbanan. Paul says, "Olkach tomochem b'yom arishon priyei tzodar kapos tomorrow." Now, we do not take the lulav at all on Shmini Atzeres. And that is for a variety of reasons. But Lemaisa, because of that, there is a major machlokas rishonim when a chutz laretz will keep 2 days as follows. The Gemara says that the psulim on the rishon of the Gemara talks about lochem. There's no din of lochem after for the other days. That's clear. No din of lochem. If there's no din of lochem the other days, so what about the other psulim? Here, Rishonim are divided. Have a Ramban. It's very clear. It's only lochem. Only lochem. Other Rishonim say all the psulim are not applicable. The Rambam is of the opinion that none of the psulim are applicable. But here you have a major machlokas rishonim. It's the first ritva in Lulav HaGozel. What about Yom Tov Sheni Shel Golius? What does that revolve around? It revolves around as follows. It's a very complex machlokas there. I'll oversimplify it. One group of Rishonim are very clear. The moment they did not make a lulav on Shmini Atzeres, what happened? They did not introduce the inyan of Sfeika D'Yoma to lulav, and therefore, one day is the Raisa, and the second day there's no takkan of Sfeika D'Yoma B'chal. And therefore, it's just like third, fourth, fifth, or sixth, or seventh day. Others say it's a Sfeika D'Yoma. If it's a Sfeika D'Yoma, so anything on the first day applies to the second. That's a gross oversimplification. But what that means is as follows. That any Ben Chotzoretz on the second day, if he's keeping 2 days Yontif, has to make sure that his lulav is A, not a problem of Lochem, and B, that it's fully kosher, l'chol ha'deis, l'chol ha'shitas, etc. Now, on the other days, you have a major machlokas rishonim. I said the Ramban says it only applies to Lochem. The Rambam Tosus say it applies to all psulim. You have a serious machlokas rishonim here. And as such, the chatchila you certainly can use. You should use something that's kosher l'mahadrin. On the other hand, b'di'evid, the psak of the Shulchan Aruch is that you can rely on those shitas that it's all right. But that should be relied on only b'di'evid. That's now. When we come to the Dalet Minim, there's another major issue. And the problem is most people do not take seriously learning these inyanim well. And therefore, when I stand in shul and I see all sorts of people doing all sorts of things, or otherwise, medaktik and mitzvahs, there's a halacha of chatzitza. That means I have to hold the lulav. We have a halacha min b'mino in a chotzeit. So that's why the ring, the lulav holder, is made out of, the holder is made out of a lulav, and the rings around it are made out of a lulav. There's an old minik. I never saw anyone violating it until I saw various yeshiva brachman familiar with Menhag doing it here, that around the three rings, lulav rings around the lulav. And that's on one hand, it's al pi zohar. On the other hand, it is certain basic halachas. If the lulav has to be absolutely straight and you want to prevent it during the chag from spreading out, so if you tied it that way, it will not spread out during the chag. And there's no reason to violate a minhag Yisrael of hundreds and hundreds of years. But when you hold the lulav, there are two things that people do wrong in a very standard way. The problem of chatzitza. Your hand has to holding the lulav. There can be nothing chotzeitz, a sitter, a machzer, whatever. Not, and inside, there can also be not anything else that's chotzeitz. It has to be only one of the gimel minim there. Number one. Number two, when you put the hadasim in the aravos, in the holder, some people don't like to stick it all the way in because the leaves fall out. It's a good idea. But let's say, where do you hold it? If you hold it underneath where the hadasim and aravos are, it's a whole shail of netila yedei davracher, and you should be holding it to make sure that your hand surrounds where the hadasim and aravos are. Because then it's a whole shail of netila yedei davracher. There's a very complex machlokas Rishonim about that, which is something that has to be avoided at all costs. So if you're afraid that by sticking it all the way in, the leaves will fall off, which is very valid. And if you want to make sure that you have gimel tfachim of mishuloshim, so you have to have gimel tfachim of mishuloshim where you know that the leaves are there. If you stick it in, the leaves fall out, you may be lacking your gimel tfachim of mishuloshim. So then you have to make sure what's inside your hand are part of the Hodas branch, the Arava branch, and obviously the Lulav, and that there is no Chatzitza B'chal. For people who wear tefillin Chol HaMoed, let's say on Rosh Chodesh, when do you take off your tefillin? Take your tefillin off after Shachris, but after Kriyas HaTorah, before Musaf. The reason we take it off before Musaf is very interesting. That because Kedushas Keser, Kezin Ilcham Alochem Hamon Emala, we do not say Kedushas Keser when we're wearing tefillin. What about Bnei Ashkenaz who don't say Keser? So if you take a look at Mishnah Berurah, he quotes people, Bnei Ashkenaz, who actually wore the tefillin on Rosh Chodesh. But he's very much against it. And the minhag of Klal Yisrael is to take tefillin off before. Now, for those people with tefillin Chol HaMoed, so the minhag was to take your tefillin off before Hallel. Why? Because if you're holding the lulav with your tefillin, it's going to be a chatzitza. And that's why we do it differently on Sukkot than we do on Rosh Chodesh. On Pesach, for those of you who wear tefillin Chol HaMoed, there's no reason to take it off before Hallel. You should take it off before Musaf. But the origin, the reason why on Chol HaMoed people take it off before Hallel is because on Chol HaMoed Sukkot is a shaila of a chatzitza. And because of that, if you have your tefillin wrapped around your hand, and say it'll be the hand that you take your esrog, there'll be a chatzitz. Now, according to most achronim, when you hold the lulav and esrog, you have to hold it together. That means you hold it, the Rambam says, 3 minim in your right hand, 1 min in your left hand, but they have to be held together, they have to touch each other. Magen Avraham brings Peter Sefer Rakanti to hold them separate, but the Maskana Sachroner in general is to they must be held together because it's halacha of one netila of dalad minim. So if you happen to be holding them in one hand, it's together. But during Nanuim, you're not doing one hand; you're doing it with two hands, and the rest of Hallel maybe also, and therefore the esrog should be touching the lulav holder for the lulav. And that's another thing that people are quite sloppy about. They don't realize it's come out. The Magen Avraham brings the name Sefer Rakanti, but that's generally rejected by almost all achronim. Now, that's that sort of wanted to give a summary of an understanding of many of the basic halachas of lulav. I would advise you to spend some time learning the halachas of lulav, and they're very complex. And just as a reminder, everyone here has been here in Eretz Yisrael for more than one sukkah, that sleeping in sukkah, in Chutz La'aretz, not everyone sleeps in sukkah. If you take a look in Rishonim, you never find in Rishonim people not sleeping in sukkah. By the time Jews penetrated into Poland, then all of a sudden you get winters already and it's cold. So then you begin you begin finding people explaining why, because of the din of mitzvah, of not sleeping in sukkah. Certainly here in Eretz Yisrael, halacha is very clear of sleeping in sukkah, no question about it. And when the Gemara talks about being in sukkah, it says yishenim tachtov, ein yishenim tachtov, hayoshin tachal sukkah. The main thing in Eretz Yisrael is sleeping. If you are in the Sun Belt of the United States, Miami, California, Arizona, Texas, and the like, there's absolutely no heter for not sleeping in sukkah. Sleeping in sukkah is an absolutely essential part of mitzvah sukkah. And it's not in northern climates, just as the Ramah says in Poland, you'll find that the Ramah says only certain chidei skulas slept in sukkah. But in Eretz Yisrael and Bovel, everyone slept in sukkah. Take all the Rishonim. Now I'm thinking about it. Some of the Rishonim I'll have to check again, in northern Germany. But I'm not sure, because most of the Rishonim were in Germany, were not in the northern part of Germany. It's very common in early Achronim when they moved into Poland, then there everyone's talking about not sleeping in sukkah. But the Mordechai talks about not sleeping in sukkah and Shmini Atzeres, because that time it's late and it's cold. The implicit assumption of the Mordechai, who was in Germany, is that 7 days she slept in sukkah. Sleeping in sukkah is not a mitzvah. Chassidus in Eretz Yisrael, it's an absolutely essential part of the mitzvah. Okay, that summarizes what I wanted to cover tonight.